Happy Friday, everyone. First, let me say thank you to those of you who are supporting Into the Word financially, keeping us on this radio station. We appreciate that. Couldn't do it without you. God bless you for it. Then I want to go to my usual Friday, you need to be in church. Everybody should have a home congregation. Everybody should be there regularly in their worship and fellowship and service and training and whatever else needs to go on in the local congregation. We need that. So if you don't have some place like that, you go and find a place like that. And if you're actively looking right now and you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, we invite you to come over, check us out, see whether or not we might become your home congregation. We're going to open our Bibles to Judges chapter number 7 today, verse number 19. We're right in the middle of the great story of Gideon's victory over the Midianite alliance. He's got 300 guys that God has whittled the number down to so that it is very clear that God is the one giving the victory. These 300 men are up on the hill of Moreh, which is just north of the Midianite encampment. And by the way, this encampment has more than 120,000 people in it. The location, if you want to look at it on a map, is just a few miles, like 4 miles north of the city of Jezreel. The plan of attack is that during the middle of the night, Gideon's army will divide up into three components and come down onto the lower slopes of the hill of Moreh, and on a signal from Gideon, they will all blow their little trumpets, they will smash their little pots, and then they will lift up the flickering torch that's inside of that clay pot and yell, "A sword for he who is and for Gideon!" And then they're going to charge into the camp. But of course, God is the one that's going to take care of the fighting, and we'll read about that in just a moment. So let's see how it turns out. Verse 19 of Judges 7 says, "So Gideon and his 100 men who were with him," so 300 guys divided up into three groups. And I think that's kind of related to the geography of the hill of Moreh. It kind of has three little sections to it, three little slopes coming down toward the south. So more than likely, he's in the center section. "They came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch." Now, the ancient peoples, the Israelis included, used a three-watch system at night. So they divided the hours of darkness into three equal portions. Now, of course, the hours of darkness change based on the time of year. So the beginning of the middle watch could be anywhere from 10 to midnight, depending on the type of year that it was. Think of it in this way. The beginning of the middle watch was effectively the time when everybody had finally gone to bed and were sleeping. So they came to the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, which they had just set. And then they blew the trumpets. All right, I told you last time in the setup to this that typically warfare doesn't happen at night. So that's one thing that makes this unusual. Second thing is, when military movements does occur at night, then there's not going to be a torch in every single person's hand, and there's not going to be a trumpet in every single person's hand. Those are going to be limited to certain key persons. So for the trumpet to sound by 300 guys at the same time indicates a much larger force. And so does these torches being lifted up by them. The smashing of the jars is basically just to really startle the sleeping encampment. with a very loud and unexpected noise. And I'm sure it echoed off of the slopes of the hill of Morah. And all of us who have suddenly been awakened out of a sound sleep by an unusual noise, we know that when we first wake up, we are totally disoriented. And that was also part of the intention here. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the jars. They held in their left hands the torches and in their right hands the trumpets to blow. And they cried out, "A sword for He Who Is and for Gideon." And then every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. They cried and fled. So what had happened just in the physical world is they have startled this huge military encampment out of a good solid sleep in the middle of the night. And when they look up, getting out of their tents, they look to the north from which the sound came, and they see 600 torches that are scattered across the face of the hill. And in the pitch black, they would have assumed a huge force coming from that direction. And then God adds to it. Verse 22, when they blew the trumpets, He Who Is set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. So in the pitch black of the night, these Midianite and we've got also some other groups involved in this, they believe that the people, the shapes that are moving around in the dark around them, are part of the attack. And so they start attacking each other. And of course, if you suddenly got attacked by someone out of the dark, you would immediately assume that it was an enemy. So you would respond. And so the whole army of the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the East are fighting amongst themselves at this point. The 300 men of Gideon have not even engaged them yet. And so once the bodies start piling up from this hand-to-hand combat within the groups, eventually they break. They believe that they are losing. They're actually losing against themselves, but they feel routed. And so the army fled as far as Beth Shittah, toward Zererah, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Tabat. Now, most people will not recognize any of those names. Effectively, what they do is they flee eastward toward the Jordan Valley. Now, it's only about 15, 16 miles down to the river. And all along the way, they're still trying to fight each other, probably. And Gideon's army is also pursuing them, picking off a few here and there. What their intention in fleeing that direction is to get back home. So they're going to flee to the Jordan. Then they're going to flee down the Jordan Valley. And about another 18, 19 miles down the Jordan Valley is going to be the crossing point to go over to Sukkot, and then from Sukkot go up to Penuel, and then from Penuel go up and join the traditional trade route that goes alongside the eastern parallel to the Jordan Valley. And then from there, they'll go a little bit south to a place that's called Karkar, which is on that royal road of the ancient Middle East. It would take them a couple of days in order to get back to Karkar. So verse 23 says that the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali, and from Asher, and from all Manasseh, and they pursued after Midian. So when the sun comes up, and the Midianite alliance is in full retreat, heading the other direction. The call goes out for anyone in the general vicinity of the eastern Jezreel Valley to come and help mop up this situation. At this point, God's made his point that he could rout a massive 120,000 plus army with 300 guys. So he's made that point. Now it's time for as many Israelis as can to come out and do the cleanup. So Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim. That's to the south of the Jezreel Valley and south of Manasseh as well. Come down against the Midianites. Capture the waters against them as far as Bethbara and also the Jordan. So Ephraim, being to the south of Manasseh, is their borderland is overlooking the Jordan right around the crossing point by Sukkot. And from there all the way down to the Dead Sea, they've kind of got that all covered, is what Gideon asked them to take care of. You make sure that any non-Israelis that are coming through this area, engage them, deal with them. And so all the men of Ephraim were called out. They captured the waters as far as Bethbara and also the Jordan. And they, the Ephraimites, they captured the two princes of Midian named Oreb and Zeeb. They ended up killing Oreb at a place that they named the Rock of Oreb. Makes good sense, right? And then Zeeb they killed at the winepress of Zeeb. Again, they give a name to these places because they ended up catching and executing some of the leaders of this oppressing force that's been pestering them for years. And then they pursued Midian, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon across the Jordan. So they engage in this activity, kill the two guys, and then come back across the Jordan to meet up with Gideon. Chapter 8, then the men of Ephraim said to him, "What is this that you've done to us, not to call us when you went to fight against Midian?" So they were upset because they were not on the initial mustering, because he'd only, at the initial mustering, called up those that were right around the eastern end of the Jezreel Valley. And Ephraim, while it's not terribly far away to the south, doesn't actually touch on the valley. So they're like, "Why didn't you call us for the first mustering?" And they accused him fiercely. Now, why are they so upset? Well, part of it might be the fact that they felt that they should have been part of that initial thing to help. But another thing we have to take in consideration, this is the period of the judges, and it's typified by people that kind of do their own thing. And one of the things that happens when you fight battles is you get to collect and keep whatever the losing side leaves behind. And so they may have been, I'm not saying for sure, but it could be that they were a little upset that they might have lost out on some of the plunder, the booty, if they had not been collected at the first. So he said back to them, "What have I done now in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the grape harvest of Ebenezer?" Now, the grape harvest of Ebenezer that he's referring to is the work of his own group, his own clan, when they started the fight. Now, the grape harvest only happens on one day in each vineyard. That was the way it was supposed to work. You only cut the clusters that were at peak ripeness, but you left everything else for the poor people to glean. See, that's the other part. You might think of it as leftovers, but what Gideon is trying to express is here, your leftover harvest of the gleanings where you killed Oreb and Zeeb, that's a bigger deal than what we did at the very beginning. God has given into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb and Zeeb. What have I been able to do in comparison with you? Now, some people say he was schmoozing them, but I think he's actually being quite honest, is that they are going to have attached to them in the story the victory over two of these Midianite oppressors. So their anger against him subsided when he said this. And then Gideon came to the Jordan. He crossed over, he and the 300 men who were with him, exhausted yet pursuing. So they're the point of the spear. They're the lead element in this pursuit because they were there right at the very beginning of it. And they cross over. It's the day. The next day is probably coming to a close because, like I said, it's about 15 or so miles from the start of the battle at the foot of the hill of Morah down to the Jordan Valley itself. And then it's another 18 miles south to the crossing point that goes over to Sukkot. So they have probably spent an entire day chasing, pursuing the retreating force of the Midianites, dealing with any stragglers coming behind them. And so here they go to finish their day. So he said to the men of Sukkot. Now, Sukkot is the city that was founded by the establishment of Jacob's cattle farm in the Jordan Valley. It gets its name because he set up a bunch of corrals there. Sukkot is also a word for a corral. But it's grown up to a full-fledged city now. And Gideon goes into the people of that city to ask for some material support in his pursuit of the retreating oppression forces of the Midianites. So he said, please give loaves of bread to the people who follow me, for they're exhausted. And I am pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. So there's still two more that need to be tracked down. The officials of Sukkot said, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand that we should give bread to your army? Now, what they're basically saying is, you don't have them under your control, do you? Why would we risk giving you material support for the people in that force that's going to come back in here eventually and deal with us? If you already had them in your control, that'd be a different matter. But no, we're not going to give you any support. And so you can hear the fear element in them. And Gideon said back, well then, when he who is has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I will flail your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. So he makes them a promise. All right? Once God does give these guys into my hands, I will be back and I will spank you with thorn briars, thorn bushes, as my rods of punishment for being unwilling to assist me in God's work. From there, he went up to Penuel. Now, the way that Sukkot is located is it's near the joining of a stream coming out of the east down to the Jordan. Well, if you follow that stream upward, you're basically reverse tracking on the path of Jacob, where he had set up his cattle ranch at Sukkot. And if you go upstream to the east, you come to the place where he saw the face of God. That's what Penuel means. Mahanaim, the two camp place, is also nearby. And so this is just backtracking along a historical route. There is now a town that's grown up around the place where Jacob wrestled the angel of God. It's called Penuel. So when he comes to that city, he spoke to them in the same way, meaning, I need you to give me supplies. Now, this is probably only about 10, 15 miles east of Sukkot. Well, the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Sukkot had answered. So they basically lock up their town, say, we're not helping you. We're not going to provide you any assistance until you have totally defeated these guys and we know it's not going to blow back on us. So Gideon said to them, the men of Penuel, when I come again in peace, meaning after I have sorted this out, I will break down this tower of yours. Apparently there's a tower that these guys were speaking from in their security, refusing him to come inside. Well, how does the rest of the story turn out? Verse 10, now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor with their army, about 15,000 men. Now Karkor is, as far as I can tell, is about another 15 or so miles south of where Penuel is likely to be located. It's along the main north-south roadway on that side of the Jordan. And so they are barricaded in there, but there's only about 15,000 guys left of the original invading force. And this is where we find out what that number was. All who were left of all the army of the people of the east, for there had fallen 120,000 men who drew the sword. Now, it's been probably 2 days' travel from the original battlefield at the foot of the hill Gibeah. That's not right either. For some reason, it went right out of my head. We'll get back to that later. From the original site that Gideon started this battle until he arrives at Karkar, probably 2 days' travel. In 2 days' travel, 120,000 of the opposing force has already died. Many of them, perhaps most of them, at the hands of their own military members because of God's intervention. So there's about 15,000 of them left that are barricaded in. So Gideon went up by the way of the tent dwellers east of Noba and Jogbeha, attacked the army, for the army felt secure. And then Zeba and Zalmunna fled. He pursued them. He captured the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and he threw all the army into a panic. So that's the wrap-up. That's the cleanup. Now he's got the two leaders, and he's going to deal with them. Then Gideon, the son of Joash, returned from the battle by the ascent of Heres. He captured a young man of Sukkot and questioned him. And he wrote down for them, the officials and the elders of Sukkot, 77 men. And he came to the men of Sukkot and said, behold, Zeba and Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me, saying, are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hand, that we should give bread to your men who are exhausted? And so then he took the elders of the city, and he kept his promise, his threat. He took thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them taught the men of Sukkot a lesson. So he spanked them. He whipped them with briars for not assisting in this matter. And then he went up to Penuel, and he broke down that tower that they had all been hiding in, and he also killed the men of that city. Apparently they resisted his efforts to deal out justice to them. And so a whole bunch of them end up executed. And then finally, we come to this. He said to Zeba and Zalmunna, "Where are the men whom you killed at Tabor?" Now that's Mount Tabor, which would have been just a little bit to the north and east of the hill of Moreh. See, I told you it would come back to me again. Where this battle all took place. It's in the near neighborhood of where Gideon grew up. And it's apparently a place where there had been some resistance against the Midianites by Gideon's elder brothers. And so he wants to know, where are their bodies? And they answered, "As you are, so they were. Every one of them resembled the son of a king." And he said, "They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. As he who is lives, if you'd saved them alive, I would not kill you." So if you had not killed my brothers at Mount Tabor, I would let you live. I've destroyed your army, but I'd let you live. And then he said to Yether, his firstborn, probably a teenager, "Rise and kill them." But the young man did not draw his sword, for he was afraid because he was still a young man. And then Zeba and Zalmunna said, "Rise yourself and fall on us, for as the man is, so is his strength." Basically mocking him for not being man enough to kill them himself. And so Gideon rose, and he did kill Zeba and Zalmunna. And then he took the crescent ornaments that were on their necks of their camels. And that becomes the beginning of the next story related to Gideon. And it also becomes a problem that begins the story that comes after the death of Gideon. Mark your place. We'll get back here next time we get into the Word.